personal development world is like, become your best self by doing all these things that society tells you makes you a stronger, better, faster, skinnier person, versus if I find my true nature, then I can work with how I naturally am as a human being to cultivate a mastery of that self. Mm-hmm. And so we're still both, so to speak, growing, evolving, and getting better, but one is working with our inherent self and with our true deep desires, and the other one is can sometimes be getting us out of alignment with who, wow, we really are in hopes of becoming better. And this better is actually undefined.
Welcome to the Mastering Mindfulness Institute with me, Gina Warfel, a podcast that invites you on a journey to self-trust with your food and body so you can reclaim your health with confidence. As a registered dietitian who has multiple degrees in health, and yet I was constantly at war with my body and couldn't trust myself with food, I've made it my mission to show you that coming into harmony with your food and body is all possible. I challenge conventional and outdated ways of dieting to show you how to step into sovereignty over your food choices and life. I can't wait to share with you the depths of my own journey, as well as thoughts from experts and real human beings on their journey just like you. Thanks for listening.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Mastering Mindfulness Institute podcast. I am kicking off season 3 in Nicaragua, and I have one of my favorite people in the world. We're going to have an amazing brain, mind, heart, soul stretching conversation today. I have been wanting to get this special guest on here for a long time, and we've been sitting and waiting on a topic that really, I think, pulls at our own hearts and something that we think is really meaningful. But today I have Christy Warfel, who is my sister, and I'm so excited to have this conversation because I think with my growth, you guys know that I share pretty vulnerably on this podcast about my challenge points, my growth, some huge ahas, and I think Christy has been more influential, I think, than anyone in my own personal growth and making me think different and challenging me to go deeper into the relationship with myself in the most beautiful ways. Today, we're going to talk about the desire to distract, which I can resonate with so much. Mm-hmm. And Christy is, we're so lucky to have her because she is the founder of Sangha. And so welcome, Christy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I can't wait to dive into this with you, but I do want to ask you to share a little bit about Sangha and what that is so people can get a feel for what your heart and soul work is really all about.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for asking that question and just bringing it to light. I do think that the way that most people would share Sangha is that it's a business, but it's actually, for me, Sangha has a consciousness of its own. And so as I've been really bringing it to life, it's something that I go into meditation with and I get to know a little bit more deeply. We have a relationship, and it's really a way of living that's in harmony with others and the planet and a way of creating. But the main way that people can interact with us right now is we have a school of transformational arts and sciences. We explore a lot around the human experience and what transformation really means. Really, the definition of transformation is positive evolution. Mm-hmm. So we're all exploring that together. We work with a lot of different practitioners, different modalities, different philosophies, different tools and techniques, and we kind of bring them all together to really create change.
Yeah. And what I love is that you really embody the work so much. And we've been here in Nicaragua. What actually brought us here is you've been hosting a retreat, passion, purpose, and creation, right? Mm-hmm. Purpose, passion, and creation. And it's been really fun. I've actually interviewed a bunch of your practitioners who have these big ideas around transformation and personal growth. And what is so cool is we've been in this container of everyone listening to their own soul and their own desires and the soul of their work. And I was able to do that as well. Like, I got to spend the week feeling, what does mastering mindfulness feel like to me? How do I want other people to feel? And to connect to like the soul of my business is so beautiful. And so it's so cool to watch you do that with Sangha, like being in around you so much, seeing you meditate on what is right and how it makes people feel and the impact it's going to have. And now seeing you create a space for other people to do that too, which is a lot of what we're going to talk about, I think, today, which is finding maybe our true desires.
Yeah. And what comes up along the way. I love the word desire because I feel like our desires are actually divine messengers that are, like, if you think about the gingerbread crumbs on our way to our most fulfilling life and our most fulfilled selves, our most nourished selves, our desires are like the breadcrumbs that keep us on the path. And so when we talk about creating a container to really explore and listen to your desires, sometimes the desire to distract comes up. And I think it's so interesting, all these different ways that we get in our own way and that things kind of come about to pull us out of that alignment, that sense of alignment, that sense of true deep desire, which is different. I want to mention that it's a lot different than something that you talk about, which is cravings, which is like a need for hollow fulfillment or like empty feeling. Trying to use something to satiate that's never actually going to get there. And I think if we're really present with a true desire, it is nourishing when we fulfill it. So I kind of want to set the context for the conversation, maybe.
Because a lot of, I think desire gets a bad connotation, that it is almost like a craving. The desires are bad. So how can desires be good?
Yeah, there are layers to desire. And I think when I notice something that comes up, so let's just use you and me. When we got here to Nicaragua, we landed and we had this idea of really connecting with ourselves, connecting with our businesses, connecting with what we're serving in the world and what we're doing. And along the way, there was like, oh, I'm feeling like I need something to eat. Do you want to go to this restaurant and like grab something? And maybe, or I'm feeling like I need a little boost, or I'm feeling like I might need a coffee, or I'm, you know, and that's like a surface level need. That's kind of like this thing that we want that is satiating or distracting us from what we're actually needing or the deeper desire. And it is sort of this like, this need to move. I want to check my phone. I need to check my emails. Oh, I have this to-do list. I need to do this thing. I have this thing that I have to get done. It can even be like productivity things can really take us out of presence with our deeper, truer desires. And so I will just start observing my behaviors and looking at, what do I think I need? Usually it comes with the word need. It's like this hollow, like needy place that comes up inside of me. And so when I feel that, I'm like, oh, let's start to observe. And you know a lot about the observation process. So like what was coming up for you when we first landed that maybe a cue?
Oh, yeah. I noticed exactly what you said. I'll notice it whenever there's not a deep desire, but like a craving for something to avoid presence, it will sound like exactly what you said, where the voice in my head will be like, I need. And the first morning we landed, we got in late at night. The first morning that we woke up in Nicaragua, I heard this voice in my head saying, I need food. And specifically, I wanted a chocolate chip cookie bar that I had, or chocolate chip cookie protein bar that I had in my bag. And it's like, okay, whatever, it's a protein bar. But I knew deep down, I was like, I'm not hungry, but my head and my brain, I heard these thoughts like, I need it. And the past me and, you know, years ago, I wouldn't have even thought twice about this need. I would have believed that need and I would have just went for something that wasn't my deeper needs. And so this time I was listening to that voice in my head and I was like, wait a second, do I really need this? And I challenged myself to sit and just sit in presence of my experience. And it was so uncomfortable. I was like, why is this so uncomfortable? And so as I was sitting there, I wanted to grab my phone and I was like, okay, I know this is you wanting to avoid whatever is here. And I challenged myself to leave my phone sitting next to me and not touch it. And I sat with myself and I was like, yep, okay, this feels very anxious. What's underneath that? It feels like I'm grasping onto, like I want something familiar. I want something comforting. This is really triggering me that I'm not productive right now. I'm in the jungle in the middle of nowhere with hardly no people. It was like so triggering to me. And I really felt that inner friction of really wanting to have food for comfort or my phone for distraction. And it was really triggering for me.
Yeah. And what I would love to go back to the top, we're going to get deep into this rabbit hole of desire. And I actually, Gina took us down a little bit. I want to bring us back up okay. a little bit and then come back, drill back down. But it's what you said was that I wanted to pick up a food bar, a chocolate, you know, chocolate, whatever, nutrition bar. And that is your gateway to accessing your patterns. And I think we all have our own gateways based on our coping mechanisms or the way that we're designed. We're all so unique. And so my coping mechanism, it oftentimes my way in, my gateway to myself is noticing my work tendencies. So I had a very, our parents were business owners and they were also into health and wellness. And I think sometimes when you get those things drilled in, those are like things that you cling to in times of uncertainty or things that become like an attachment. And so if we can look at ourselves in that way, I know that oftentimes work and business is a gateway for me to cope with uncertainty. And so for you, you were like thinking about a food bar. For me, I was thinking about all my clients and my work emails and all the things that I had to get done. And it was like, I need to do this, and this.
Is that bad though? It almost kind of sounds like it's a way to keep things under control or.
Well, I think it's not bad. It's just knowing ourselves. And so actually it can be really cool because if you know that food is your gateway to self-exploration, then you can start to be curious about exploring yourself and food and not have it be good or bad. It's just your way of, it's your portal to self-actualization.
Love it.
And so for me, it's business. And a lot of my clients is also business. And so because a lot of how I was molded and crafted was through the lens of business creation. That is oftentimes where I lean into and rely on for things. And there's no wrongness to it. There's no right or wrong, but it's like, for me, business is a portal for self-actualization.
Can you explain that really quick before you keep moving on? What is the portal? Where are we going to? What is self-actualization? Kind of a big word.
Yeah. So the way that I want to share it in this context is so many things get put on us, what we are supposed to want, what we think we should want, what society wants us to want, what our parents want us to want, what really it's like we take on all these thoughts, beliefs, and tendencies from our environment. But there's actually like an inner compass and an inner sense of direction and guidance if we give ourselves permission to start listening to it and we start peeling off the layers that were put on us. And once we find that inner compass, it allows us to explore the essence of our true nature. And I think about the difference between personal development world is like, become your best self by doing all these things that society tells you makes you a stronger, better, faster, skinnier person. Versus if I find my true nature, then I can work with how I naturally am as a human being to cultivate a mastery of that self. Mm-hmm. And so we're still both, so to speak, growing, evolving, and getting better. But one is working with our inherent self and with our true deep desires. And the other one can sometimes be getting us out of alignment with who we really are in hopes of becoming better. And this better is actually undefined.
That's really beautiful, though. I've never heard of self-actualization put that way, and how that contrasts to personal growth, especially because I know for myself in personal growth, I guess I never felt like I ever got to good enough.
Right. Because there never is truly an enough point. And I think this is such a good segue into the surface level desires versus like the deeper desires. But I don't even think that self-actualizing is a destination. The way that it's, that label can kind of be taken as like, aha, like I've reached self-actualization. I think once you find that inner compass and how to listen to it, your inherent self, your natural self, your soul self, however you want to talk about that, your personal true north will still be continually taking you on a journey, an adventure, and you're going to learn and grow and explore and expand and have this adventure with life itself. But it's going to be from a place that feels good when you actually hit the mark. And that is, I think, the difference between deep, true desires that are divine messengers, that when you fulfill them, when you get those desires met, it is like so nourishing, and you feel it in every corner of your body, and your heart lights up, and you're like, if you can take the time to sit and bask in the fulfillment of it, it just, you feel fulfilled. You feel true fulfillment versus, oh, I want to eat this thing, but instead I'm going to have carrots tonight. And you keep chewing on carrots and you're like, this carrot just doesn't taste like what I really
wanted.
And then
you had 80 carrots. And you had 80 carrots. Hit the sweet spot of what you're really looking for.
It never hit the sweet spot. Oh. And so you're just like incessantly trying to do something good for yourself. What if you would have gone out and like had the vanilla ice cream or like, you know, really hit the spot of what you wanted, you feel fulfilled and you feel like you can savor the moment, right? Instead of feeling like you're continually chasing something that's good for you or chasing something that you're supposed to do or you're supposed to have.
Yes, I definitely can relate to all of that. It's so interesting how before, when I was trying to do the right thing of what society told me was right with nutrition, I was doing exactly what you said, which was like eating all the rice cakes, eating all the healthy things, and feeling like I was never hitting that fulfillment, but trying so hard. But then when switching to listening to my body and tuning in, now I eat the desserts, I eat the indulgent things, but it's like there's no, I don't even know how to put it, but it feels just like harmony. Like I'm hitting that deeply fulfilling spot that I don't need to eat all of it or none of it. It's so interesting. So you're kind of also talking about that with all things in our lives.
Yeah. And I, for my personal journey, I love pumpkin pie and I've gotten so present with eating pumpkin pie. It's one of my, it's so nourishing. It's like such a nourishing food.
I remember seeing you eat that for breakfast one time.
Oh yeah. When it's in alignment for me, it's great, but I have to be really present with myself because there are days where it's not. And if I just keep eating it, it like turns, it loses the flavor. And in business, they call that the law of diminishing returns, or that there's like a harmony point in business where what you want, the supply and the demand meet. And it's like the peak point of fulfillment, both financially and supply and demand. And anyway, so there, but I digress. This can be talked about in all forms of life. And, you know, I work with a lot of achievement oriented people. And so when they have this idea of food and what you're going to eat for one meal is just like this small example. But let's say that you have this need or this craving or this thing that really underneath all of it, there's a deep, deep desire that wants to be fulfilled. There's this longing. But you just have this idea of how you can meet this surface level need. I've met people that can start entire businesses just trying to get a deep longing met, but it never actually fulfills it. So then they're stuck in this business and in this repetitive chasing and building and achievement cycle. And it never hits the spot. It never hits that sweet spot where they feel nourished. They make lots of money or they hit high levels of achievement. And there's still this like craving for more. And how crazy that we could spend 40 hours a week or more working towards something that we think is going to hit a sweet spot.
How do we get there? How did we get to this place of insatiable craving, looking for something? It's almost like you want to find that thing, so you try harder, but then the harder you try, the more you don't find it. How do you get stuck in this loop?
I think it actually originated from a good place, but it's our discomfort with seeing people go through their own journey and it maybe being hard and wanting to help them. And in our desire to help people get out of their situation, we end up putting things on them like, oh, you should do this. You should be this productive. This will help you do this thing and solve this problem that I don't want to see you struggle with.
Mm-hmm. So I'm on the expectation end or I'm on the receiving of the expectations. That's how I end up.
Well, I think it can be both. It could be, I think that the self-help world is really difficult because it's like a culture of two people in a relationship, but it's really many people. It's many people telling you like, I will help you. I will save you from yourself. You know, like I will, let's make all this go away.
Do my morning routine.
Do what works for me. Right. And
that's so funny. Gosh,
you know, I could go on about that forever, but I won't go into that fully, but it's like,
oh my gosh,
do my thing. Yeah. So, and then there's also a place with us in that relationship where we don't want to be seen in our own struggle and in our own discomfort. And, you know, we could keep getting bigger and bigger and higher in this conversation, but it's like our need to show up and be, everything's great. Everything's amazing. I'm doing so well. I'm so successful. I'm doing everything perfectly. And so I think in our cultural conditioning sometime to look perfect, to be perfect, to show up as achievement oriented, to be doing all the things, to have it all figured out, to look like we have it all together, we can ignore how we feel in the act of doing something, how we feel along the journey. And so, you know, I would say that this is the same for building a business versus going on a health journey. Do you want to just get to the end where you look good and you are less weight, or do you actually want to love the journey of food and how you feel every morning when you wake up and the practice that you do to get into your body, to connect with it? And the same with business. It's like I could have a business that may or may not work and make me money eventually, because it's like there's no guarantees. I think in weight loss and in business, or in health and in like we can. Or do you want to enjoy the whole journey so that when you wake up every morning, you love the team that you're working with, you feel like you're on purpose and you're really connected to the growth of what you're doing and the heart of it, and you are financially profiting and making money along the way, but it's not some end result.
Yeah. And so how do you navigate that? How do you, like, why do we desire to go to a place that's out of alignment for us or into distraction? I think our original starting place is this desire to distract from those deeper desires.
So this could be a very in-depth conversation, but what I noticed for me when I got to Nicaragua, we all have our own relationship to life and to what we need in order to look or like we're doing okay. And the way that we were taught to cope with things that are uncomfortable for us. And so what I noticed this particular time in Nicaragua was that we got here and my desire to distract and get all my emails out and text messages and phone calls and checking in with different clients, I think is probably two things for me at play at one time. And the first one is feeling like I'm pulling away from everything that I love and almost like a disconnection from deep connections that I do have. And do I start feeling alone? Do I feel like I might not, that connection might not be there when I get back? Almost slightly like anxious. And so that was a little bit present. I feel like I've worked on a lot of that stuff within my architecture, so it wasn't as loud. I think the other thing that was a little bit louder was, are all of the people coming going to get the value out of this that they really want?
With your retreat that was coming up.
And am I going to be able to provide the experience that everyone's hoping for, which at the end of the day is like a people-pleasing stress response. And somewhere in my system, I didn't do things the right way for how someone wanted me to do it. And so I go into a stress response because maybe I did something and I got punished for it or I whatever. So it's bringing up this inner stress response that I've been programmed to have when I'm supposed to create something for someone and I don't do it right. Or I don't meet the expectation. And so I just get to start working with that part of myself and observing it. And then once I can see that, I can go, okay, I am going to go in later when I have the space to actually heal that part of me, because I feel like the deeper healing is something that really shifts you neurologically, cellularly, emotionally. You can actually transform the way that your body responds in the future to those same circumstances, those same triggers, those same situations. So I do, when I return home, I'm going to call up one of my practitioners and go, hey, I'm really dealing with this stress response, this anxious response that is not allowing me to create from true presence. Because I'm stressed and I'm thinking about how everyone else is going to.
So you found that trigger because you felt yourself wanting to distract from it. It was a distraction point for you.
I noticed that when I went to sit down to be present with what I was creating, instead, I ended up becoming anxious and stressed about how others were going to experience it. So instead of being present with what I knew I needed to do and really trusting myself, it took me into this future thing of, oh no, what if? And so once we can start, I like to try to get people to not be so nervous about their patterns or their triggers or their bad habits. And I think you and I are really aligned in that way, being curious.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like to think about it as like, oh, I'm going to dance with my pattern for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like when I start noticing that I'm in a stress response, I'm like, oh, okay, let's dance. Maybe you're out on the dance floor with
me. You want a tango?
Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I see you're kind of coming over.
That's
and you're just
so funny.
Playing with me. So yeah, so I try not to take it too seriously. I'll even watch myself in a pattern where most people are like, oh gosh, I don't want to do that bad behavior or that bad thing. Where I'm like, okay, I'm going to live into this a little bit. I'm going to like do that thing that I'm not supposed to do and I'm going to watch it. and I'm going to observe it, and I'm not going to try to control it. I'm not going to try to force it to be different than it is. I'm going to let it like work through my being. And so then I start to notice, okay, I'm getting anxious and I'm thinking about this. And then when I get anxious about how people are going to experience my container or this retreat, then I want to immediately start doing other things. I want to provide more value for other clients that I know are going to have a good experience. So that's for me. I like double down on what I know is really good. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to reach out to all these other clients that are having super big wins. And I'm going to like really invest in those tasks. So, you know, that's just how I started observing myself. And I was like, okay, so it's not good, bad, right, or wrong, but it's like, what's driving this?
Yeah.
It's not pure intuition.
Wow. You can start to see what is driving all of your behaviors.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so what's on my gas and what's on my is compulsion and avoidance of my stress response driving my behavior, or is my true intuitive conscious self that is a master? Like my business creator, when she's in harmony and in flow, is just this master orchestrator.
Wow.
She's so centered, and she knows what needs to be done when, and she feels this pulse and this rhythm of growth and consistency and expansion all at the same time. And she's present with all of it. And then there's this other thing that's like a driver that is not me, that is overriding my innate creative abilities and forcing me to do things or avoid things that I don't want to be doing, or that's maybe just not the highest and best use of my time.
Yeah. How empowering. You are really creating, and you're creating your reality, but like you said, like you're dancing with it. And I love the idea of that with cravings, of like inviting them in and being like, with this pattern I have, and being like, okay, I see what we're doing. Let's dance with this. Okay. There's anxiousness today. There's fear today. Like, I love that you said that, like the beauty and the lightness that we can have. And how freeing.
Sorry, can I see my anxiety as a dance partner?
Can I see my anxiety as a dance partner? Love it.
Like, I might not be loving the whole song that we're dancing to, but I'm just going to dance with you.
You're going to, you're not going to dance with me forever.
We might get one song together because once I tune into you and I see what you're all about, I can start to heal you.
Yeah. Wow.
And then you won't be back. So I could be really present with you while you're here. I could just enjoy this.
Yeah. Moving towards it instead of running from it, where it's going to keep chasing you all night on the dance floor. If you don't just have a dance with it, it's going to keep following you around all night.
Let's just dance.
Yeah. Let's just do it. Do this, baby.
You know, I have a friend who actually was co-facilitating this week, and he does a lot with meditation. And he goes, you know, a lot of meditation teachers will just ignore the elephant in the room and try to like spiritually bypass it. And he's like, but there's like a chainsaw or a loud, a dog barking, you know, across the street. And it's so loud. And we're like, focus on the sound of the ocean. Focus on your heart rate and the rhythm of your body and really deeply connect. And he's like, and can we just bring the dog in? Let's all listen to the sound of the dog barking. Like, let's not pretend that it doesn't exist.
Right.
Let's not pretend that all these things driving us don't exist.
Right. How much freedom in just the radical honesty and tuning into what's present. But in order it seems like in order to be able to access this deeper knowing and working with this part, these parts, we can only do it in presence and not in distraction. It's been so interesting being here where I, the guy who runs the facility that we're at, John, he said, I would encourage you to keep your phone off for a few hours in the morning. When he said that, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And so I decided like my phone was not going to be on until after we were done eating breakfast at 10 a.m. The first day I was so triggered by it. I was like, wow. And I was fascinated with what is my attachment to having my phone on. There's nothing really waiting there for me. but I feel so uncomfortable. I feel like I lost this security blanket and it was very uncomfortable. But then as the days went on, I realized that in the presence is where I can find these friction points and start, like you said, dancing with them and asking questions, exploring them. And if every day I would have started my day with my phone on, I would have been getting these like Instagram dopamine hits, distraction with email, texts, phone calls, that I wouldn't have probably even felt any friction point to guide me into like deeper self-awareness. It's crazy. Just a phone, just one phone.
I do think it's really powerful to play with different practices to see what it does bring up for you. And it was the same for me. Some nights I could put my phone on airplane mode, and if I woke up and it was in airplane mode, I wouldn't feel the need to get on it. But the nights that I would forget and that I would wake up to a bombarding amount of text messages, threads, Instagram. Like, I would not consider myself someone who is addicted to social media, but just that morning practice of sacred silence and not having your phone made me see how attached I am to like opening different apps and checking them. And yeah, definitely something that was really revealing for mm-hmm. me that I'm going to keep exploring. And I do wonder for me if there's like a sense of wanting and needing connection. And so going into some type of connection, which could be friends on Instagram or text messages first thing in the morning. And where am I not connected to myself, or what part of me is needing connection? You know, so then I can get curious about that.
But very honest with yourself.
Yeah, I started to look at like, okay, what am I plugging into on my phone? Is it email?
What
is it
am
work?
I craving?
Yeah. So then if I can see what I'm even trying to do on my phone, for me, it was a lot of connectivity. So it's Instagram, text messages, it's seeing who's doing what. And so for me, that looks like a connection thing versus like a productivity thing in that moment when I wake up.
Right. So you can get an idea of what it is that you're really desiring.
Right.
It's like, I'm not desiring Instagram. I'm desiring connection, feeling like I'm connected to the world.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And just seeing what that spaciousness provides. And I think that's where you have to be willing to observe yourself and dance with yourself and get to know yourself in order to fully meet those deeper desires.
Mm. Wow.
And if you're not willing to do the dance, you're going to keep chasing hollow, meaningless, surface level fulfillment.
Never hitting the spot.
Never going to hit that sweet spot.
You're just going to keep eating 80 carrots.
80 carrots. You know, you're going to try to keep getting your nutrition, right. But maybe what you needed was a mango, or maybe what you needed was a piece of pumpkin pie.
You're right.
You know?
Yeah. So how can we start to, because we live in a world that's very stimulating, chaotic. We still need to work, right? We can't just meditate in the jungle all day. So how do we start balancing this out, being in a culture and a society that really encourages such a push?
I have been playing with that for myself, and I think everyone should play with it
mm-hmm.
because what works for me probably isn't going to work for you. We're all so different, the way that our innate way of functioning and way of being. And so I have tried to have a consistent morning practice, and it's pretty difficult for me every day at home to have that sacred silence where my phone is off and my emails are off. Some days I wake up so inspired to get right into work. And so I've tried to quit controlling that, because it doesn't seem like, no matter how many times I commit to myself that I'm going to get up and have a dedicated morning practice of silence and spirituality, I don't feel like that's my innate way of being. But I can have one full day off. What I'm really playing with this year, I think I did a lot of observing last year about when I would really be connected to myself and when I would want to be connected, but I was actually not reaching self-connection at all. And so I think these like little blocks in the morning are hard for me. But if I were to take a full day off or a weekend off and be really present, it's that spaciousness of time that works for me, where other people might not have that with kids or job. So an hour in the morning or 2 hours works really well for them. Or some other format, you know, going on a retreat, actually taking a vacation for yourself, I think is very recalibrating.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I'm going to plan quarterly staycations this year at my home where I don't have to do anything or go out. I don't have any tasks and I can just recalibrate to my own nervous system, listen to what's really there. And I have time to watch the layers of distraction come up and work through it and then still have time for presence. I think it's unrealistic to think we won't be distracted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you want to do 30 minutes of meditation, maybe give yourself 20 minutes to be distracted.
Yeah. I think it's been a really amazing experience for me that normally with like a vacation, I'll plan and do all these things. And then being here in Nicaragua, I've learned just having a lot of downtime of, you know, like a vacation where I'm not doing a lot of things and I'm setting the intention to look for these places of resistance and get to know myself and come into this quiet. I remember you said this to me about a month ago when I was feeling anxious around not being productive and filling up my day. And I was like, I'm so annoyed with this. And you said, what if this was a time for deep listening? And I was like, wow, I can do that. Like I can give myself permission to not have to become something, to achieve something, to progress in something, but to give myself a chapter of deep listening. And I've been sitting with that, and it's amazing how much more access to so much more information inside of me instead of outside books and learning and the rest of the world. But just by you providing this container for this group of people at a retreat, it's about deep listening. And it's just such an extraordinary different experience. And I think people can do that, whether you go to a cabin in the woods or you go attend a retreat or something where you have someone saying, hey, it's okay to have this container for just deep listening and getting to know yourself and not doing and becoming and whatever. Like, it's so beautiful.
What I love about what you said, and that I really want to kind of piggyback off of before we kind of come to a close, is just that there's this productivity myth, I think, is that doing more is going to get you farther, faster, better. But the presence of knowing where you need to go to deeply nourish yourself or create the biggest impact saves so much time. And I think that's conscious creation, that's conscious eating. It is a way where we can cut out all the noise and stop trying to run in 50 million directions and ping-ponging off of all these things in life and getting really centered. And so that depth and that presence and that deep listening actually gets you farther, faster, with less resistance and less effort. You can smoothly flow. And if you knew, you know, we could say this for business, but we could also say this for food. If you knew what would deeply, deeply nourish your body, your soul, your taste buds, your desires, and you just got to go to that one thing, and then you felt satiated, and you got to savor it, you got to feel it and receive it and enjoy it, how much different would that feel than trying to stuff 5 salads in your face or like 80 carrots?
It feels
like
nourishing, feels like the word. It feels deeply nourishing. And on the way, I think we think of nourishment like nutrients, but like hitting that deep soul spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Is there anything else that you want to, any thoughts that you want to leave people with?
I think it's just like, there is no destination. What I would really love for people to know is that connecting to the core of who we are is this beautiful journey. It's a a way of living. It's not something that has a destination or an end goal. And so you can just slow down and relax into it and meet yourself where you're at today. Maybe your level of awareness is just that you're on your phone for 3 hours a day, and it's because your phone sends you a notification and says, your screen time today is 3 hours a day. Great. That's the level of self-awareness that you have. That's perfect.
I can keep watching on Netflix 4 times.
Yeah. And like the more you, I told someone one time, because I had this guy that was just like, I want to go deep. I want to get more. I want to like learn more about myself and get bigger breakthroughs. And true opening and revealing is so different than that. And if you were to think about someone that was like holding you at gunpoint and was like, tell me all your deepest secrets. Tell me right now, everything you've ever done in your life, versus a friend that is like, I love you no matter what. And you could tell me anything and I would listen and I would love you and I would cherish every word just to get to know you better.
It makes me emotional. I'm gonna cry right now.
I know. Who do you want to reveal yourself to? Mm-hmm. You could reveal yourself to yourself out of force and push and grind and almost like abuse, or you could reveal yourself to you out of like, I just want to get to know you. I just like, I want to know who is this soul that I am, and how could I witness myself more? I want to witness you. I want to know you. I want to explore you just as if I was my own friend.
That's so beautiful. It's amazing that our society doesn't know, it doesn't like, hasn't cultivated that. Like, what a beautiful new approach and way of doing things. I so value the work that you're doing, because you don't just say it, but you embody it for yourself. And all the practitioners who have taken Sangha, what's so beautiful is to watch you elevate them into their own knowing and their own creations. And now they've become co-creations. Now they're supporting with their own gifts and their own desires. And so I think what you're doing, helping people tune into their own desires and letting that pull them into knowing themselves deeper instead of pushing, like, it's so beautiful what you're doing for people, for humanity. It's incredible. So tell me a little bit about, where is Sangha going in the world, and what are the things that you're up to this upcoming year?
Well, thank you for asking. This year, really a big part of what our school is doing is a process called transcendence. And it's really going through cycles of peeling back anything that is not aligned with who you really are, and then cycling into how to hold space for others and learning different places. And I find that if you don't do the first piece, the first cycle, that you end up taking all of what you think you're supposed to be as a space holder or a human being on the planet or your purpose, and you're just filtering it through the lens of what you've already been told that you should do to make a difference in the world or how you should help people. So we really go through a whole phase of that unraveling and get to the clearest version of who someone is. And then we talk about all of the different tools and modalities to explore and expand consciousness and how to utilize that to support someone's healing journey. So really becoming a guide for helping others navigate this big arc of self-actualization.
Wow.
I think it's just so fascinating about it is that some people that end up going through the training end up creating their own business or their own methodology or their own work in the world based on what they discovered. So even though they come out of it knowing full well how to hold space for others, how to become a practitioner, how to work people through a healing journey of transformation and self-actualization, what they find and discover could be so much bigger than that. And then we sort of give people the tools to go out and create that in the world and practice embodied conscious creation.
Wow. So beautiful.
That's transcendence. Yeah.
Amazing. And where can people find you if they want to keep learning?
Yeah. So if you go to sangatribe.com, it's sangatribe.com. There's actually a video that you can grab that's just around conscious awakening and what are the layers that I go through when I'm awakening to myself and self-actualizing and what is that journey like? So that's a really cool resource. I would recommend doing that first, but all the information's there.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll put all of your links in the show notes for everyone. Cool. Thank you so much for this authentic and beautiful conversation.
Yeah. Thanks for going into it with me. It was really fun to have that conversation when we first arrived.
Yeah.
And I was like,
real triggers.
I got
real
to talk triggers. To you. I'm so triggered. And you're like, me too. I'm like, oh good. Can we talk to people about this?
Yeah. We're truly just sharing from our own experience. So you guys, I hope that you really enjoyed this authentic, beautiful, mind-stretching conversation today. And check out Christy and Sangha if you're inspired by the work. I actually watched the Conscious Awakening training, and it was actually really, really good, very helpful to help start knowing where am I moving through these stages of consciousness. So if you liked it, give us some love, write us a review, rate the podcast. You can give us some feedback on what you thought and send us a message. You can always reach out through Instagram, send a personal DM, and we'll see you guys in the next episode.